This is Janice Schweizer with the Pantograph for Tuesday, January 19th, 2021. We will begin with the article on the first page entitled Bouncing Back. Bloomington Normal Gym Operators and Members Welcome Easing of Mitigations by Lenore Sobota. Governor J.B. Pritzker's easing of COVID-19 mitigation measures couldn't have come at a better time for people who made New Year's resolutions to get in shape. It also is also welcome news for gym operators and longtime gym users. It was hard to find the motivation to work out at home, said Carla Staver of Bloomington, as she worked out with a small group at Four Seasons 2 at 2401 Airport Road in Bloomington. I'm a teacher. This is my release. Motivation isn't the only problem. Anu Retrishkin of Normal said, while the gym was closed and he and his wife had to work out at home, we tried to motivate each other, but it was a challenge with three children in the house. Erin Weber of Lexington said she tried to work out at home when the gym was closed, but it was easier to do with a trainer. Weber, Staver, and Radhakrishnan were part of a small group working out at Four Seasons last week. Their trainer, Sabrina Walrich, not only had to devise exercise routines for each, she had to design them so the students didn't closely cross paths. I work with a lot of high-risk people, and I make sure they have a personal training space, said Walrich, the gym's lead fitness instructor. We made a lot of adjustments. Pritzker's announcement came the same day a new fitness facility, Crunch Fitness, opened in the former Hobby Lobby building at the Shops at College Hills. We were anxiously watching the news that day, said Brianna Nelson, assistant general manager at Crunch Fitness. We've been continuously busy here so far, Nelson said Monday. The new gym opened with 2,500 members. The state has gone through various restrictions since the pandemic began spreading last year. With the latest easing of restrictions, gyms will be able to go back to having group fitness classes, but face coverings are still supposed to be worn. Tony Mayer, president and CEO of Four Seasons, said Monday they anticipated that restrictions would be eased and were prepared. When we got the word late Friday afternoon that group classes could resume, we were ready to rock and roll, he said. They resumed group classes on Saturday, but under Tier 1 restrictions, class sizes will be limited to 25% of room capacity. I talked to a lot of our members already, and they're excited, said Mayer. Activities such as group fitness classes are important motivators for many, especially new exercisers. Camaraderie and being part of a group class is always fun for people, said Carl Clover, owner of the workout company at 419 North Kays Drive in Normal. You have to have a workout buddy. Meyer said, with a workout partner or group class, everyone keeps each other accountable. Even with the pandemic and restrictions in effect, gyms reported seeing increased membership as the new year arrived. We have seen an uptick for January. We started seeing an uptick in December, said Meyer. It's probably not as big as 2020 or 2019. Chandler Pillsbury, operations manager, LA Fitness at 2103 North Veterans Parkway in Bloomington, said his gym was seeing about 250 check-ins a day last fall, but a recent day had twice that number. Some people have dropped or frozen their memberships because of the pandemic, he said, but we're also seeing a steady increase in new memberships. Clover lost some members too, including people who had been coming to the workout company for more than a decade. I hope those people are all coming back, he said. One way gyms coped with the shutdown early in the pandemic and restrictions once they could reopen was turning to or increasing online exercise offerings. We call our WOCO to go, said Clover. It's a really neat thing. We can customize it. We give them a workout equipment package. They come in and pick up 6 or 7 pieces of equipment we'll use that month. Four Seasons offered a new online classes before the pandemic. Now it has nearly 70 classes a week. The pandemic caused us to ramp up our virtual offerings, Meyer said. We've gotten good at Zoom. Both Meyer and Clover expect online classes to continue after the pandemic ends, but Clover said online classes don't take the place of getting out of your house and seeing your friends. Meyer agreed. People crave the community. They crave being with one another. They crave the social aspects, said Meyer. I don't think brick and mortar fitness is ever going to go away. Fitness professionals and avid exercisers have advice to newcomers to stick with their resolution to become more fit. I've always counseled setting specific goals, being realistic about those goals, and setting a realistic timetable, said Meyer, who also suggested having a workout partner, hiring a personal trainer, or taking group exercise classes to keep you accountable. I tell people to treat your workout like a doctor appointment. If you miss your appointment, reschedule, said Walrich. Talk to a professional to make sure your workout fits your goal, she said. You want to make your workout plan fit your body, not make your body fit your workout. Nelson said new members of Crunch Fitness get a Smart Start package that includes 60-minute sessions with a personal trainer and a body scan. She said the personal trainer can help design a safe and functional workout. To stick with it, continuity is key, she said. Staver recommended patience. Take it at a slow pace. It's not going to change all at once, she said. Matthew Wingstrom of Bloomington, who has been exercising at Four Seasons for 20 years, also counseled newcomers to start slow and mix it up so you don't get bored. Pillsbury's advice is to not get discouraged. Everyone goes through a bit of a slump. There are going to be times when your motivation is going to be down, he said. Convince yourself to go to the gym, even if it's only for 15 or 20 minutes. Continuing with reopening news, we have Soups On. Will diners return? Restaurant owners eager to serve as restrictions ease. This is by Timothy Eggert and Sierra Henry. The buzz Ken Mizga felt when he learned that people could be seated at tables inside his restaurants again didn't last long. I'm not really sure how the community is going to react, Mizga, the founder of Epiphany Farms Hospitality Group, said Monday afternoon amid preparations to open Epiphany Farms Restaurant in Anjou above for indoor dining that evening, the first time since March. I know our chefs, they miss placing food on porcelain, Mizga said of the downtown Bloomington farm-to-table restaurant at 220 East Front Street in Bloomington. The Illinois Department of Public Health announced Sunday that Region 2, which includes McLean County, has met the metrics to move out of Tier 2 coronavirus mitigations and into Tier 1. Under Tier 1, indoor service is limited to 25% capacity of a restaurant or bar that serves food or 25 persons per room and no tables exceeding 4 people indoors. Outdoor delivery and takeout service continues under updated hours. For Mizga, as with most good news delivered during the pandemic to hospitality players, almost immediately his hope was replaced with a familiar anxiety. Once the mitigations are lifted, will locals keep masks and apart from servers and other patrons since the spring to stop the spread of the virus come back? And would servers, some laid off to keep afloat his business, return to the industry kept in limbo by the changing rules? We know how to care for our guests and keep them healthy, Mizga said. Tonight, we're not turning anyone away. If someone wants to be seated, we'll seat them. The state has been under various COVID restrictions since March to contain the number of infections, a process that has caused deep economic losses in many sectors, especially restaurants and bars. On Monday, state officials announced restrictions in most parts of Illinois would be loosened, but warned they could reverse plans if cases spike again. Although he's grateful for the move to less strict clampdowns on bars and restaurants, Mizga said he's also nervous that patrons won't immediately flood into the places public officials have for months prevented them from using. There's just nobody walking around anymore on Friday night, on Saturday afternoon. I have a feeling it might be hard for downtown to get back up and running, said Mizga. His anxiety about a return to his closed-for-months restaurants, bakery and pickle in downtown Bloomington, an old bank restaurant in Leroy, also extends to his employees. He had to lay off 32% of his staff in 2020 because of virus-caused losses in revenue. Some used the opportunity to leave the city and the industry to go back to schools. Others left the state altogether. If we can open for indoor dining today, how do I know we're not going to be locked back up in 2 weeks? Mizga said. If I start hiring people back, how do I know that I won't have to let them go again in a month? Until he knows the new mitigations are here to stay, Mizga plans to phase in the reopening of his locations. Once it's clear the community is comfortable with indoor dining at one location, he'll open the doors to another. Other local bars and restaurants are following suit, asking patrons for patience as they switch back to indoor dining. Bloomington-based Lil Beaver Brewery announced on social media that it plans to wait to reopen for indoor service until Friday to get everything in order to make for a better reopening experience, while at the same time making it safe for our patrons. Shannon's five-star restaurant also announced that it had to delay the switch to indoor service on Monday because it won't have enough staff to do so. A pair of pubs in Uptown Normal, Pub 2 at 102 North Linden Street and Maggie Miley's at 126 East Beaufort Street, revealed on Facebook plans to reopen Tuesday. Both closed outdoor seating areas and suspended carryout options until further notice, citing financial struggles brought on by the pandemic, after Pritzker closed indoor dining for a second time in November. Without having any indoor dining, we didn't see any feasible way to stay open, Pub 2 General Manager Luke Rocco said about the decision to suspend operations. Unfortunately, closing was the option to choose to lose the least amount of money. Rocco said the pub plans to reopen at 11 a.m. Tuesday with the same limited menu used over the summer. While he is happy to return to business, Rocco said the 25% capacity limit is very stringent and changes some of the business's operating plans. For us, this is very different, he said. We're just happy to get people back in the doors. Jack's Restaurant had just opened its doors a week prior to Pritzker closing all restaurants and bars in March 17th. The new Mediterranean restaurant at 1600 Visa Drive in Normal has struggled to maintain business since, offering curbside carryout throughout the spring and operating limited indoor dining over the summer. We serve everything fresh, so we trash a lot of stuff every time we close, owner Diora Hazarova told the Pantograph. The main thing I have concerns regarding restaurants is when we are closed, we still have to pay the bills, rent, and everything. There are still expenses, even if we stay closed. Jack's Restaurant shuttered operations until further notice on December 19th, but now plans to reopen Tuesday at 11 a.m. When the state allowed indoor dining briefly over the summer, Diora said it helped maintain business for a while. Now, she said, while she wishes the state would allow a little more than 25% capacity, this is better than nothing. Curbside and delivery, it doesn't cover the expenses, she said. The 25% dine-in will help to stay open, at least. In local news, we have McKnight. Everyone will have a chance for a vaccine. McLean County Health Director. Process will last several months. This is by Kevin Barlow. It may take several weeks to distribute the vaccine to McLean County residents eligible in Phase 1A and 1B of the vaccination rollout. Still, health officials report that everyone who wants the vaccine will be able to get it eventually. It is encouraging to see the excitement and high level of interest in receiving the vaccine in our community, said Jessica McKnight, administrator for the McLean County Health Department. The vaccine rollout will be a process that lasts several months. This is only the beginning. Eventually, everyone who wants a vaccine will be able to get one, she added, but fulfillment of the state's vaccine plan will take time and patience. As we have mentioned, Phase 1A and Phase 1B includes an estimated 50,000 individuals in McLean County, she said. The vaccine is still very limited, which in turn limits the number of clinics and appointments we can provide at this time. The McLean County Health Department is planning to continue having at least 2 clinics a week, depending on supply of the vaccine being received from the IDPH. Department officials are working with Twin City Hospitals and healthcare partners to see additional clinics added in other locations across the county to increase and improve accessibility. New clinics will be added, and we will have a phone number for the public to call to schedule appointments for future clinics, she said. Once the vaccine is widely available, the state's plan is to have many vaccination providers offering COVID-19 vaccines in doctor's offices, retail pharmacies, hospitals, and federally qualified health centers. We expect this to happen by February or March, depending again on the supply. Several residents expressed frustration that the reservations for the clinic filled up quickly when the department's website went live for sign-up on Friday. The rollout of the vaccine is going to take time, and it's going to take collaboration across our entire healthcare system, she said. I know we are all tired. COVID fatigue is very real. I know it is very hard to ask you to wait a little bit longer. Due to the Martin Luther King holiday, the health department is closed on Monday. Updated numbers from the weekend and Monday will be released Tuesday. As of Friday, the health department reported 12,975 probable and confirmed cases since mid-March and 134 deaths. The rolling 7-day positivity rate through Thursday was reported at 8.1%. The county moved to Tier 1 COVID restrictions on Sunday, allowing some indoor dining. The next step would be a move into Phase 4. In order to do that, a region must meet the following metrics: measure a test positivity rate less or equal to 6.5% or less for 3 consecutive days, as measured by the 7-day rolling average, and achieve a percentage equal to 20% or less for available staffed ICU hospital beds for 3 consecutive days on a 7-day rolling average, and show no sustained increase in the number of people in the hospital with COVID-19 for 7 out of 10 days on a 7-day average. On Monday, state officials announced 3,385 new confirmed and probable cases and an additional 50 deaths. IDPH is reporting a total of 1,072,214 cases, including 18,258 deaths since March. The preliminary 7-day statewide test positivity from January 11th through Sunday is 7.0%. As of Sunday night, 3,345 Illinois residents were reported to be in the hospital with COVID-19. Of those, 705 patients were in the ICU and 392 patients with COVID-19 were on ventilators. Next, we have Council to Discuss Welcoming Ordinance by Kevin Barlow. The Welcoming City Ordinance is coming back to the Bloomington City Council for discussion. Ward 6 Alderwoman Jen Garrido asked the city's legal department to draft an ordinance to provide direction and instruction to city staff, including the police department, on how to interact with residents and other agencies on immigration issues. Last week, the council voted to join a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization, the Welcoming Network, operated by Welcoming America. The organization connects leaders in the community, both in government and nonprofit sectors, to create an inclusive, welcoming space for immigrants. Carrillo and Ward 8 Alderman Jeff Craybill, who also supports the Welcoming City Ordinance, had previously spoke out against that initiative, and neither attended last week's voting session. The effort didn't go far enough, Carrillo said. Some of our residents live in fear of deportation, she said, in proposing the item, which will be on the Tuesday night agenda for the council's committee of the whole meeting at 6 p.m. The meeting was pushed back one day because of the Martin Luther King holiday. collaboration, actual or perceived, between our local law enforcement agencies and immigration enforcement agencies can create distrust in the community and jeopardizes the safety of all residents. Carrillo wants the ordinance to build upon the Illinois Trust Act, which provides basic protections for undocumented residents. Only actions required by state or federal law would be allowed. Normal council members in May 2018 approved a welcoming city ordinance. The policy offered residents assurance that normal police officers would carefully consider their interactions with the USICE and tell residents why officers are requesting their citizenship information. The Bloomington City Council failed to enact a similar measure more than 2 years ago. Calls for a welcoming city ordinance in Bloomington and Normal originally arose in 2017, led by organizations including the YWCA McLean County, Illinois People's Action, and the Keep Families Together Coalition. Mayor Terry Renner will also give his annual State of the City address on Tuesday. Renner is not seeking re-election. The meeting begins at 6 p.m. Tuesday and, due to COVID, will be available at www.citybl.org/live. In state news, we have vote by mail, decoupling fail in legislative lame duck session. This is by Sarah Mansour with the Capital News, Illinois. The 101st Illinois General Assembly took historic action by passing legislation to end cash bail prior to electing a Black House Speaker for the first time in the 102nd General Assemblies. But lawmakers ran out of time on several consequential measures, including bills that would have expanded vote by mail, allowed lawmakers to conduct business remotely during the pandemic, and eliminate newly expanded income tax deductions for business owners. Another bill relating to the state's rollout of legalization of adult-use marijuana also failed to pass, as did a measure that was part of the Illinois Legislative Black Caucus's health care agenda. House Democrats fell 10 votes short of passing a bill endorsed by Governor Pritzker that would have eliminated certain tax deductions for Illinois business owners that were created under the Federal CARES Act. Pritzker has argued this change by the legislature is needed to prevent revenues from shrinking by more than $500 million during the current fiscal year, thus enlarging the state's $3.9 billion budget deficit. Specifically, the bill would end the CARES Act amendments that expanded income deductions business owners can claim as net operating losses, carryback losses, or excess business losses. In a January 8th news release, Pritzker encouraged the General Assembly to decouple Illinois tax law from the federal tax amendments under the CARES Act, an action that would have kept the state tax code consistent with previous years. Pritzker claimed those changes would have preserved $500 million in state tax revenue from non-corporate taxpayers and owners of pass-through entities such as limited liability companies and partnerships. During House floor debate in the early hours of January 13th, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle described the bill as preserving up to $1 billion in state revenue. Democratic Representative Michael Zalewski, the bill's sponsor, said the proposed changes would impact about 440,000 taxpayers statewide. Zalewski of Riverside tried to appeal to his caucus, but 10 House Democrats voted present, while another 8 did not vote on the bill, including former House Speaker Michael Madigan of Chicago and the newly elected Speaker Emmanuel Chris Welch of Hillside. At least a dozen Republicans condemned the proposal as a last-minute tax hike on small business owners already crushed by the pandemic. During the House floor debate, Representative Tim Butler, a Republican from Springfield, said the bill amounts to the tax increase that Republican lawmakers anticipated would come up during the lame duck session. This is the textbook definition of a late night, no one is watching, lame duck, backdoor tax increase. This is exactly what people hate, he said. Zelewski characterized the proposal as an effort to prevent loss of revenue rather than an effort to raise new revenue. House Republicans were also critical that the Pritzker administration and the Illinois Department of Revenue did not notify taxpayers or the legislature sooner of the state's plan to decouple from the federal changes that were made in March. During a news conference on Friday, Pritzker said he expects the legislature will bring the proposal back in the 102nd General Assembly. Although it didn't happen in the short lame duck session, I have a commitment from the leaders that it will be brought up in the regular session, Pritzker said on Friday in response to a question about the failed decoupling bill. I'm anticipating that it will get brought up soon in the new session of the General Assembly. The remote voting bill, which passed the Senate unanimously, would have permitted the House and Senate to convene remotely and cast votes during a public health emergency where in-person participation poses a significant risk to the health and safety of lawmakers, their staff, or the public. It would have required both chambers to create rules for remote participation in session and committees, and it would have applied to the boards of the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules, Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, and Legislative Audit Commission. The Senate changed its rules during the brief May session to allow for remote hearings, but the House failed to pass similar changes. Two lawmakers voted remotely in the lame duck session. Both chambers released tentative calendars last week showing that they are scheduled to meet in person several days each month through May. Since the pandemic hit Illinois in March of 2020, members of the House met briefly the following May and earlier this month at the Bank of Springfield Center, while the Senate continued at the Capitol for those brief sessions. Multiple people that attended last week's lame duck session, including the chief of staff to the House Speaker's office, have tested positive for COVID-19. The governor said last week he would not prioritize lawmakers in the next phase of vaccination. The vote by mail bill, which passed the Senate by a vote of 40-18, would have made permanent some changes that were implemented in response to the pandemic for the 2020 general election. This would have included the use of drop box sites to collect ballots without postage and curbside voting during early voting or on election day. It also would have required the State Board of Elections to provide guidance rather than rules for securing collection sites. Neither bill was taken up for a vote by the full House on Wednesday. Meanwhile, House Bill 122, which would have added another round of 75 marijuana dispensary licenses, among other actions, passed the Senate but did not receive a vote in the House. Next, we have Man Who Drove Motorcycle Into a Crowd Gets a March Trial Date by Kelsey Watznauer. The first defendant charged in connection to the civil unrest that broke out in Bloomington Normal last summer is expected to go to trial in March. Marshall Blanchard, 22, was arrested in June after police said he drove a motorcycle into a group of people walking near the McLean County Sheriff's Office. The incident occurred during a peaceful rally at the Law and Justice Center, held after the death of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police. Two people were struck by the motorcycle, police said. Blanchard was charged with two counts of failure to give information after motor vehicle accident involving injury, four counts of aggravated battery, four counts of hate crime within 1,000 feet of a school, four counts of hate crime, one count of aggravated assault, and two misdemeanor counts of battery. He is set to begin a jury trial on March 22nd. His trial was previously set for February, but that date was vacated last week. This concludes the first part of the Pantograph for Tuesday, January 19th, 2021. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I will return shortly with the second part.